I thought of the title that I wanted for us to use for this class and during the Bible reading this past week. And I suppose you know you're getting old when the illustrations you think of come from way back in your youth. This is one where I want to tell you how I remember this. Barney and I, you may not be aware of this, are coon hunters from way back. We never caught anything, but we went hunting a lot. And I remember one of the things from those nights, and I went sometimes with other guys besides Barney, people who really knew what they were doing. But I remember in our part of the country in those days, some of the really more solid citizens of the area were just beginning to get outside, an outside light, you know, a nightlight, one that would come on when it got dark and it was up on the pole, and that was really remarkable where we came from. So I remember being, we'd be out there way in the night around the lake down there or in some of the places where we hunted, what was known as the old Circle R Ranch, or there was a big chunk of ground down there for that. And we would, you get out there, you let your dogs go, and then you either walk or you just sit and wait till you hear them strike a trail. That's the excitement of that, you know. And I remember in the more boring part, I know it's hard for you to imagine that would be boring, but in the more boring part of that, you'd get to looking around and you'd see way off there, one of those outside lights. And you'd start trying to think in your mind, now where is that? Whose place is that? And it would be impressive to me, at least as a kid, how far away that could be and still seem like I could, you could see it. It stood out. It was, you couldn't miss it. Now you might have the wrong guess about where it was, but you still could see the light. Now, one of the things that I have thought of in reading the little book of Ruth is that same sort of thing, except morally and spiritually and family-wise. And I think that's an important lesson. Last week, remember, we talked about in our class being concerned about the future. One of the things I noticed in the comments we made about that is how many of us are impressed with the bad things that we see around us, culturally speaking, right now. And so I think the little book of Ruth deserves a place in our thinking for that reason. Why would God choose to include in his inspired word of all the human experiences that could have been chosen the story of a Moabite widow and her mother-in-law? I mean, that's an interesting thing to think about. So let's do it like this. First, I want you to see what we mean by darkness in this book. There is darkness, first of all, in a broader sense, within the society that the people are having to live in, the social or live in, the social and the moral and economic circumstances in which this story takes place are dark. And you might remember, this is from the time of the Judges, somewhere just before 1050 A.D., probably somewhere along in there. And I want to remind you that the landmark statements in the final part of the book of the Judges show us, are meant to show us, the dark circumstances which existed. Look at Judges 17 and verse 6. Right quick, Judges 17 and verse 6, and this is when there's a story of terrible idolatry and then the resulting cruelty and the unimaginable immorality that surrounds the episode being described. Look at the last sentence, really the two sentences in Judges 17 and 6. What do they say? Randy?
In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes.
All right. Now, this is laying the groundwork for us to understand how there came the time of Judges ends and the kings begin and so on. But within that statement, you can see darkness in the background of it. Every man did what's right in his own eyes. How does that explain what's going on in this part of the book of Judges? Idolatry, immorality, death, division among the tribes, one of them gets almost wiped out, that sort of thing. Look over now in chapter 21 of Judges, the very last verse in the book, verse 25. What does it say? Exactly the same thing. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And if I count right, there are three more times in between here when it says in those days there was no king in Israel. So it's making that point. There is no controlling authority. There is no recognized standard. There is no accountability for anyone's actions. There is no glue holding the society together because godly fear has been neglected and families have failed to pass along the story of their redemption to their children and enemies are threatening and there's the cycle of people drifting away from God, ending up oppressed, crying out for His deliverance, Him sending a judge to deliver them, and then that lasts for 40 years and they start all over again. So that's the ugly background of this. Now, the darkness is to be understood in this book also personally. And this would take in the first part of the book of Ruth. And you remember here, this starts out with the terrible famine. So I'm going to describe this economically. Economically speaking, this is a time of terrible hardship and suffering. You notice that the judges rule here, there's famine in the land, and this man lives in Bethlehem. How do we know Bethlehem later on? What becomes, how does this little town become important? All right, it ends up being the place where the Lord was born, but before it gets known as being the home of David, where David is when we first meet him. You notice in this case that the famine is so severe, this man, Elimelech, takes his family off to the east and the south of the Dead Sea, to the land of Moab and Edom, especially the Moabites, which is directly east of the south part of the Dead Sea, which if you look at that on the map, it is not, we wanted to keep that one out. I'm going to get another.
Which we could toss it all down.
All right, that's good. Okay. What I'm getting at here is that the part of the land where this man takes his family to try to escape the famine is not a place known for prosperity and plenty. I mean, there is a reason we call that sea the Dead Sea. That's how bad the situation that is. Now, when he gets over there, You notice that his two sons marry in that area. They even though they are from they're from Israel, and they are in a strange land. They take wives. One marries Orpah, and the other marries Ruth. After a while, the woman, Naomi's, the mother of these two boys, her husband dies, so she is left without husband. So I'm going to add to this situation the problem of grief, and then the problem gets worse, because within 10 years, what also happens? All right, the sons die, so now there is aloneness here. The grief is only confounded with the terrible being alone, and in the circumstance in which this woman lives, then that means that there is the big question of how she is going to provide for her future. How will she provide for herself? And so the economical concern becomes, it goes full circle here. So I'm going to use the word fear or bitterness, and the circumstances that she faces are all dark now, because there's not a government social program that's going to sustain her moving forward. Now, what will she do with her future? She is outside of being cared for. So there is the darkness is both in the broader society and then in the personal life. How would you describe, what would it be like for you if you went somewhere because there was not enough to live on? You were grieved of your life mate. You had your son, your children, you lost them as well, and then there was nothing to fall back on. Is it fair for me to call that darkness? Okay, very, very personal kinds of darkness. Now, here's where the story of the book of Ruth comes in, and I'll call this the life in this story. And this is why this story is in Scripture, and I'd like to use maybe some key ideas from this book that are important. There is a great emphasis in this book on the idea of kindness. And it's loving kindness. It is steadfast love. And maybe I could gather the two ideas together with the word kindness and loyalty. And that would gather the idea. The great Hebrew word, chesed, which is translated mercy in the King James Version, Old Testament, loving kindness in the American Standard and New American Standard, and steadfast love in the English Standard Version, which explains God's covenant loyalty to His people, His kindness to them throughout all circumstances, even when they may not be able, they may not have been able to live up to their obligations with this. But you watch what happens. Naomi decides now, having lost everything, to return to her home from the country of Moab, go back to Bethlehem, in other words. This is chapter 1 and verse 6. She's going to see if the Lord, and this is another big part of this story, I should have it first, but God gets spoken of by His personal name, the Lord, also in American Standard, Jehovah. In some of the new versions, the word Yahweh gets used. It's His personal name, His memorial name from Exodus chapter 3. Many times, I read the number, it's 15 times or so in this book, And this is about how God's providence, God's sovereignty, overrules things and blesses people in this kinds of situations. So she's going to go back to see how things are. Before she goes, what does she do toward her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth? All right, and look at verse 8 here. She says to them, each of them, to return to her, to their own mother's house. And what is Naomi doing in offering them this opportunity?
Releasing them.
She's releasing them. And what circumstance will that leave Naomi in?
Destitute.
All right, she'll be completely alone. So think of the kind. Why did she do it?
She loved them that much.
She loved them that much. And she's thinking not of them. If she's going back to Bethlehem and she has them to go with her, what will she be doing to them?
Taking them from their homeland.
They'll be going from their homeland. She's already been in that circumstance, and she does not want to demand that from them. She is practicing the golden rule, in other words. That's another word for kindness. Look at the way she words it. May the Lord deal kindly with you, verse 8, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. So she's giving them the opportunity to go on with their life. Now, one of the key points in this section is at verse 13. I'd like everybody to look down there and notice the state of mind of Naomi in this situation. Even though her generosity is there, at the end of verse 13, she says, "No, would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." The bitterness that Naomi feels like she has experienced is a large part of this story, and it only serves to magnify her kindness toward these two in this case. Now, Orpah decides what? All right, she's going to take the opportunity, do as Naomi has suggested, and go back to her family. Was Orpah wrong in that?
No,
there wasn't any. She is doing what even Naomi was suggesting would be the wise thing to do. On the other hand, what does Ruth do? What does Ruth do toward Naomi?
She clung to Naomi.
All right. And why does Ruth do this, by the way?
She loves her.
All right, she loves her. She's moved by kindness and unselfishness of her own. So the great statement of Ruth is found in verse 16 of chapter 1. Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you. And can you say this by heart?
Where you go.
All right. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God shall be my God. Is that a wise statement?
In this circumstance.
In this, it certainly is. Because, you see, the Lord is God. And that's the point of this little book is the sovereignty of the Lord as God. If it were a situation where Naomi had been saying this to her daughters-in-law, would it have been the same kind of loyalty? Let me tell you while I'm asking this. The statement made by Ruth here gets used in weddings maybe more than anything else. I've heard it used that way. And I have seen personally, I've seen a number of cases where this young man is a part of a group that believes and does this, and this young lady is a part of a group that believes and does this, and so they meet somewhere in the middle or some perceived middle with some other group and consider it to be action like this. This is principled here in the sense that this is a commitment to the one who actually is God. There is that kind of loyalty present. I want for us to see what it is. This is kindness and loyalty toward Naomi. Now, this part of this story goes along here. Remember Ruth says, where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more, if anything but death parts me from you. Ruth? You have a right to ask about Ruth.
Did Ruth and Naomi have a clue on how she would be accepted by the Israelites when they got back?
I think a big part of the meaning of this story is the kindness of God and being open to accepting people from other nations if they came to him. That's one of the reasons that Ruth gets included in the genealogy of Jesus. My impression is that Ruth, or that Naomi, understood that, but that Ruth was still to learn it. And that's what happens as this story goes along. They return to Bethlehem. Naomi tells the people there not to call her Naomi, but to call her Mara, which means, Naomi means pleasant, Mara means bitter. And again, the idea of bitterness is here. And notice how she refers to God, to her own people, in verse 20. Not by the personal name or the memorial name or the covenant name of God with his people, but how does she refer to him?
Almighty.
The Almighty. The less personal, not disrespectful, but the less, there is the implication of some distance in her mind here in the way God has created, has treated her. And why? Verse 21. I went away full, I came back empty. The Lord brought me here. That's the despair that goes on here. Now, that's not where the story is left, though, because there is the element now of honor which is added to this story. The kindness of Ruth enters the picture again now, and we're told as a sideline in verse 1 of chapter 2 that Naomi has a relative of her husband who's a worthy name, a worthy man, and his name is Boaz. Now, Ruth says to Naomi, this is the act of kindness, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I'll find favor. What was gleaning?
Picking up
the leftovers. All right, it would be picking up the stalks. As the grain harvest was in progress, the stalks that were dropped, or the heads of grain that were dropped by the harvesters, could be gleaned, or the grain that was along the borders of the field or in the corners of the field were, according to the law of Moses, to be left so that the poor and the sojourner could have the honorable privilege of going out and providing for themselves. God allowed things, and you look at Leviticus 19, I believe it's verses 9 and 10. This also comes up in the other passages in Deuteronomy. But this, God provided a way for the needy who were connected with his people to be cared for in a way where they would look the owner of the harvest in the eye, the one who was granting them this kindness, but they would also engage in the effort of providing for themselves. So it's not a panhandler type of an approach that ends up causing the recipient to think less of himself. It is a kindness and effort type approach in which the recipient maintains his own respect, but with gratitude toward the person who allows him this privilege of gleaning. And the key thought here is that Naomi is blessed by a daughter-in-law who allows her, who offers her to go and do this. I'm going to have to, I know it's hard for you to believe I talk too much, but we did here. The honor of this story goes along. Now, what happens is that with kindness and loyalty and honor, then there is the sense of respect. Boaz sees Ruth working or coming to his field there. He expresses kindness toward her with the instruction of Naomi, who knows the law, who knows what God's will for his people were. She offers the instruction as things go along, and there is a great sense of respect the way even the story is told, with Ruth finally, at the instruction of her mother-in-law, going to Boaz and in a respectful way and asking him to spread his wings over her as the redeemer. One big part of this book is the, in Hebrew it's a word that is like this, Goel, which is the kinsman redeemer, the one who has the right to go, if he has a relative who has died or has lost land to debt, then he can go and purchase it and keep it in the name of his family. Or if a relative is married and he passes on and leaves a widow, then if the kinsman redeemer is willing, he can enter into marriage with that widow and bring along family members to him. And so it would be an act of kindness and an act of loyalty and an act of honor for this to happen, and Boaz does it. And what happens in this book then is that bitter Naomi turns into bitterness gets turned into joy, because what happens is that Ruth is married to Boaz. They're blessed with a son, and this son will turn out to be the grandfather of King David. And therefore, I'm going to write here the idea of legacy, a history that turns out to be a blessing in the extended history of the people, and then a place in the story of redemption for other people as well, or in God's plan. Of course, I've just very quickly surveyed the last three chapters of this book, but that's the way it turns out. There is a huge change in circumstance here because of these qualities under the rule of the Lord that still blesses people. There is a way in our own lives for light to shine in darkness, for us, because we believe that God is the Lord, to practice these qualities in keeping with His Word. We there can be an influence in the world that can shine for a long, long ways if we can approach things in that manner. All right. In all kindness, I'm going to finish the class right now. Thank you all for being with us. Everybody has a good week.